Good morning, everybody. Good morning. My name is Anish Chopra. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the President's Chief Technology Officer. And it is extraordinarily exciting for me to be here today because we'll be talking about a subject that's been near and dear to the President's heart and a big priority for our office as we look to improve our learning and educational outcomes powered by the potential of technology and innovation. In the President's joint session to Congress, when he laid out the vision for the American Jobs Act, the President spoke broadly about the need to out-innovate, out-educate, and out-build the world with specific emphasis on opportunities for job creation in the near term. He emphasized the new initiative to modernize 35,000 schools, but made particular emphasis that when we put people back to work fixing roofs and windows on those schools, we should also install science labs and high-speed internet in classrooms all across the country, acknowledging the importance of modernizing our educational infrastructure for the 21st century. Today, we make the first down payment on the President's vision with the rollout of the Digital Promise Board of Directors and Initiative. And I must tell you, on a personal level, the board had a chance to meet with President Obama just a few moments ago. And board, tell me if I'm wrong. Did he fire you all up? Did he fire you up? He certainly did. He gave them some direct instructions to move this program forward. And I am so excited to get this particular event off and running in the spirit of the President's charge to that board. To kick us off, I want to invite the godfather of the legislation that brought us Digital Promise, Kentucky's own Congressman Yarmuth. Please give him a big round of applause.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Anish. Good morning, everyone. It is an incredible honor for me to be here today to help launch Digital Promise. This is a great day for our country and a great day for our future. I'm here as a member of Congress, and since we have a 13% approval rating, I really appreciate that applause. We take it wherever we can get it. I'm also here because 4.5 years ago, as a freshman member of Congress and a new member of the House Education and Labor Committee, I met with Ann Murphy, a person who was part of an amazing group of education, innovation, and business leaders committed to doing nothing short of completely revolutionizing education and learning through advanced technologies, a project called Digital Promise. The goal was to do for education what the National Science Foundation does for science, what the National Institutes of Health does for medicine. I was sold. And I introduced a bill to create something called then the National Center for Learning Science and Technology. Now we have another name, which I will guarantee you will not replace Digital Promise. This will always be known as Digital Promise. But the nonprofit entity that we are here today to launch. It was approved with a lot of help and a lot of bipartisan support and signed into law as part of the Higher Education Act. My role, while I am exceedingly proud of it, was a small part in an extraordinary initiative that has been more than a decade in the making. And it is pretty clear that with the leadership of Secretary Duncan and all of you here today, the decade of work that got us to this point will surely pale in comparison to what lays ahead. I firmly believe that today is one of those days that we will look back upon years from now and think, I knew it was going to be big, we're at the White House after all, but I had no idea it would be that big, that we would completely change the way children learn, revolutionize education, and strengthen our nation. So no pressure at all. But what we all know is that with dedication, collaboration, and sometimes most critical federal investment, technology can be transformative. In the 20th century, there was a direct correlation between America leading the world in education and also in innovation, technology, and economically. That in an increasingly globalized marketplace, with other countries competing more successfully across the board, Digital Promise can ensure that this generation of American children is the most educated the world has ever known, and by extension, the next generation of American adults will be the best trained, most capable citizens to lead the world in the 21st century and beyond. That is what this center is all about. That is why I'm so proud to be here. That is why I'm so proud to introduce a very special young man. Josneel Martinez is an 11-year-old seventh grader who attends Global Technology Preparatory School in East Harlem. He's already seen how digital learning can make a difference. When he was in the sixth grade, his school partnered with the City of New York to implement the New York City Connected Learning Program, funded by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. That program is a citywide initiative managed by the New York City Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications and the New York City Department of Education, in which CFY, a national nonprofit organization, is a lead partner. It's a perfect example of a program where a partnership worked together to bring digital learning into schools, and Josneel is here to tell us how it changed his life. Now, just by quirk of fate, Josneel was born the same time the digital promise, the idea, came into being. So there's a little karma there, Josneel. Please join me in welcoming, with a warm round of applause, Josneel Martinez.
Well, hi, my name is Josneel Martinez, and I'm proud to be here today to introduce Secretary Arne Duncan. But before I do, I want to tell you a little bit about myself. Now, digital learning has changed my life forever. Back in 1999, my parents moved from Dominican Republic all the way to East Harlem. I did pretty well in elementary school. It was okay, but it was still hard for me to accept now that I'm a sixth grader. I have more responsibility, more homework, and moving to a new school called Global Tech Prep, aka Global Technology Preparatorium in East Harlem. And if you didn't hear me, East Harlem! I ended up getting a promotion and doubt letter saying that if I don't work hard enough, I might get left back. Well, just imagine this. Your boss sends you a letter says, if you don't work hard enough, you're gonna get fired. Now think, wouldn't you wanna roll down on the floor, start crying, say, no! I did. So, I tried to do my best. I was determined to go to seventh grade, but so was my mom. She wasn't letting me go down. And I knew that some of the challenges that were going to be in front of me were concentrating. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. I thought technology could help me. I even picked Global Tech Prep because I knew it can help me. I knew that they make blogs, make videos, use PowerPoints, Microsoft Word, everything that we need to educate ourselves. But still wasn't passing, unfortunately. Until a nonprofit called CFY, Google them, came to our school and told us that we were going to give all the sixth graders a login to a site called Power My Learning. It's a site with millions, hundreds, let's say billions of games. And each of those games teaches us anything we want. Math, science, ELA, music, it doesn't matter what subject, it's there. And the good thing is we get to keep the computer they gave us. It was a learning device. Now here's where my mom comes into this play. She put on a schedule for me, Josneel Martinez, get on the computer 3 times a week and use it. So at least 3 times a week I'm prepared. I know my brain is working. It says, I want to learn now. Sometimes I can wake up in the morning, my head is like, school, 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 watch, school, 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 school. And then my mom did something else. I used to watch TV all the times. So I used to stay up late, watch Friends, That 70s Show, anything that was on. I used to watch all of that. Then my mom, she cut that in half. She put it on a plate and everything. She told me, She cut that. So now I'm watching maybe 1 hour, maybe 2 hours of TV. But most of the time, I'm either studying, reading a book, or doing something that can help me benefit in school. Now, my school helped too. They put a whole team together. I'm talking about my principal, my teachers, everything, just to help me, one student. And the CFY software helped a lot. Without them, I think I couldn't pass. Now, what do you think digital learning do for me? Josneel Martinez, the same Dominican boy from East Harlem, still the same person. Well, it brought everyone who's important to me. Miss Russell, who's in the crowd right now, some of the CFY people, they actually put some software in my computer to help me. They did everything for me. And there was no joke. I got a 3 on my math exam, and I have a 3 on my ELA exam. Just perfect. And while I needed a lot of support, now I feel that I can do this all by myself. And when I mean a lot of support, I mean double the White Houses plus a different universe. That's how much. Now, Look at me in 10 years, Secretary Arne Duncan, because I'm going to college. Maybe even work for president. And maybe one day you'll be working for me. And I know now I'm supposed to introduce Secretary Arne Duncan, but before I do, I want to thank Ms. Russell, my mom, my friends, my family, everybody from Global Tech Prep for helping me get up here. And now it's my pleasure to introduce the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan.
Please give Josh Neal another round of applause. I could no more have done that here in seventh grade than fly to the moon. And I will absolutely get my resume ready. So, in all seriousness though, it's a really inspiring story. And what it tells me is what I've reinforces what I've known all my life is that we have great young people surround them with the right adults, caring adults who go beyond the call of duty, give them technology, give them the opportunities, give them supports, the world's the limit. And you have to not just graduate from high school, you have to go to college, you have to graduate from college, and you can be in this White House someday. You gotta really, really aspire to those things. But we all have to come together, provide those opportunities to every single child. Before I begin, I just wanna thank a couple of people, Newt Minow, Larry Grossman, and Ann Murphy. If you guys could please stand. You're the godfathers of this effort. They started this work over 12 years ago, a long time to get here, but I can't tell you how thrilled me and Karen Cater and Jim Shelton, my staff, are to be a part of this. And the opportunity you guys are providing through your vision is huge, and I feel both the pressure and the opportunity we need to deliver for you, but appreciate so much the leadership that you guys have provided. Josh, the story is extraordinary, and we have many stories like that around the country. But the honest reality, the unfortunate reality, is we don't have enough of that. And far too often, America's classrooms have failed to harness technology's potential to transform students' lives and create a new world of opportunity for them. With technology, teachers and parents can deeply engage students in learning. They can personalize instruction in ways that folks previously thought were impossible. And they can solve the inequities both in our communities and in our schools by providing all children, not some, but all children, with access to world-class resources anytime and anywhere. And that's obviously why all of us are here today, and obviously this is the choir here today. We understand that technology provides the opportunity to make rapid progress in advancing equity and excellence in our education system so that these kinds of stories become the norm rather than the exception. And my simple message to all of you today is that we need to act, and we need to act now to lead the digital transformation of education and training, both for our children and for adults looking to retrain and retool. We have yet to unleash technology's full potential to transform both teaching and learning. Technology can help provide all students with access to a world-class curriculum. It's a tool that can provide equitable access to high-quality learning opportunities for low-income students and struggling schools, be they inner-city urban, rural, or remote. This work is especially important today because the truth is other countries are ahead of us here in the United States. And at tough economic times like these, we can't just do more. We have to be smart enough to do more with less. A couple of examples of what the competition looks like as you look across the globe. South Korea has committed to phasing out all textbooks and replacing them with digital products by 2015. And they're going to make that happen. Uruguay, maybe not a country we all think about every single day. Uruguay. Today has given every single student a computer, every single one. And we're faced with one fundamental basic question. Will the United States lead in this effort, or will we be a laggard? Will we follow? And despite the real challenges, I'm absolutely optimistic that the United States can and will lead the digital transformation. And today marks, I think, a critically important turning point. Through the unique public-private partnership of Digital Promise, we are rallying the full forces of the federal government, academia, entrepreneurs, the technology sector, and researchers. And the level of talent in this room today is pretty extraordinary. You represent creative entrepreneurs, generous philanthropists, smart investors. You are innovative leaders who are committed to this work and committed to making a difference. We have a tremendous, tremendous opportunity to pull together and solve the complex problems of educating every child and every adult in this country. I especially want to thank Congressman Yarmuth for his tremendous leadership. Along with Senator Dodd, Representative Yarmuth worked to authorize Digital Promise in the Higher Education Opportunity Act, and that's the reason we're all here today. Please give him another round of applause. Thank you so much. President Obama has repeatedly said that winning the future will require investments in education, innovation, and infrastructure. He fundamentally understands that transforming the use of educational technology will require significant research and development. And he also understands that our nation's schools and classrooms are in serious need of modernization. In far too many places, today's school buildings simply aren't ready to support digital learning. And last week, I went on a whirlwind six-state, three-day bus tour across the Great Lakes region. And I never, ever ask or want the red carpet treatment, but when I visit schools, it's not uncommon for them to clean up, tidy up a little bit. But it's really clear that no amount of fresh paint was going to cover up the fact that many of these schools simply aren't prepared to lead the digital revolution in education. In the American Jobs Act, President Obama is proposing a $25 billion investment to modernize at least 35,000 of our nation's schools, especially schools that serve the neediest students with facilities in the most need of repair. The President is committed to passing a jobs bill that includes money to create school buildings that can give students a 21st century education. The administration's commitment goes far beyond renovating and modernizing schools. Our goal is to become an engine of innovation that provides leadership and support for reform. The National Education Technology Plan we released last year lays out an ambitious vision to leverage the full power of technology to support compelling and personalized learning environments for all children, regardless of race, ethnicity, ability or disability, or zip code. We understand that technology is a critical, critical ingredient in our work to make education the great equalizer it must be. But this is clearly not a task for government alone. We can work to create an environment for innovation, but experts in schools, research labs, entrepreneurs, whether big or small, they will do the difficult work of developing new technologies and getting them into homes and schools and districts across the country. Digital Promise will aid that work by bringing together people from business, education, the research community to advance the education technology field. Even as we're launching this new effort, a group of school districts has already stepped forward to lead this transformation, and we're calling them the League of Innovative Schools. Researchers at the University of Chicago will also organize a new alliance of more than 35 of America's top education researchers dedicated to identifying policies and practices that improve education outcomes for America's most disadvantaged children. A leading gaming company is committed to bringing their creativity and expertise to this important effort. Digital Promise will be a truly collaborative effort across all sectors. Working together, the collaboration can help lead America in providing a world-class education for millions of students using technology. We all know, we all recognize that there are no silver bullets in education, but I absolutely do believe that we must use every tool at our disposal, including the extraordinary creativity of entrepreneurs who are committed to producing the game-changing technologies we need. The goal of all this work is admittedly ambitious. We want to fundamentally reimagine learning. And fortunately, we have examples of schools and inspiring stories to tell, like we already heard this morning. Take another story, that of Daniel Mendez. When he enrolled in San Diego's High Tech High, he was repeating 10th grade, not too dissimilar to the challenges you were facing. Like most disadvantaged children, he faced some real significant obstacles. With a long commute, family responsibilities, and few educational resources at home, he struggled to complete homework. And so, unfortunately, that's the type of child that far too often is simply written off. Folks think that he can't make it. But things turned around for him when High Tech High issued him a netbook with high-speed internet access. His grades improved immediately. Teachers noticed that he was doing extra reading to dive deeper. He passed all of his courses, and today he's a senior, thriving academically and planning to go to college this fall. Across the country, in rural South Carolina, technology helped Nicholas Huther be a full participant in school, even when he was homebound because of cancer treatment. As a fourth grader, Nicholas used a laptop and a webcam to participate in his class at Plainview Elementary School. With the help of technology, he engaged in class discussions and asked questions, almost as if he was actually in the room. With the creative use of technology, he had access to his teachers and to his classmates and to so many learning opportunities that would have been unavailable to him otherwise. And today, Nicholas attends middle school. In rural Tennessee, the Niswonger Foundation, one of our I3 winners, is using technology to give high-need students access to AB classes and language classes that otherwise they would not have the opportunity to take advantage of. And there are so many stories like these that demonstrate what technology can do and the potential for technology to help engage students and to make learning fun. No matter where students are or what obstacles they face, a digital education can offer them a personalized plan to engage them and support their ongoing learning and success. We have a long, long way to go before America becomes a leader in digital learning, but we know what's possible and we know what's at stake both for our children and for our nation. America has always, always been a technological leader. Our country pioneered manned space travel and the creation of the internet. And yet today, our country is lagging behind other countries in leveraging the power of technology in our classrooms. It's time for us collectively to keep the digital promise to America's children and provide all of them with a personalized instruction that both raises the bar and levels the playing field. Thank you so much for your collective leadership, commitment, and collaboration in helping us keep that promise. Thank you.
Good morning, my name's Tom Khalil. I'm the Deputy Director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. I'm gonna be moderating the next panel, but before I do that, I want to welcome two leaders from the National Science Foundation who are gonna be making an important announcement about cyber learning. NSF, as you know, has played a critical role in the development of technology. They funded the NSFNet, which played a very important role in the emergence of the internet. They funded the development of the first graphical web browser, which really helped the internet take off. They funded a project of two Stanford kids that turned out to be Google, which was a pretty good investment. And they're gonna be making some exciting announcements about the investments that NSF is gonna be making in the area of cyber learning. So today we're fortunate to have Joan Farini-Mundy, who leads NSF's efforts in education and human resources, and Farnam Jahanian, who leads the NSF efforts in computer science. So come on up. At this time, I'm also gonna ask our fantastic panel to please come up and be seated. This morning, we've got Mark Edwards, who's the superintendent of Mooresville Graded School District. Dave Weiner, who's the deputy chancellor of New York City. Gabe Newell, who is president and founder of Valve, a leading video game company. And Shirley Malcolm, who's on the board of the Digital Promise and also leads the efforts in education and human resources at the AAAS. So come on up.
Good morning, everyone. It's a great pleasure for us today to join Secretary Duncan, Chief Technology Officer Chopra, the Digital Promise Board of Directors, Congressman Yarmouth, and all of you to discuss the potential and the promise of learning technologies, especially cyber-enabled learning technologies. For several decades, the National Science Foundation has invested in the development of innovative learning tools for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education. From cognitive tutors to Lego Mindstorms to Scratch, NSF has been a longtime supporter of learning technologies that can be used at all education levels, in all settings, across a wide range of disciplines, and for all learners. As technology advances at a rapid pace, realizing the potential of the new learning technologies depends on more than inventing exciting tools and resources. Success also depends on designing ways that innovative tools can be effectively integrated into learning, on understanding their impact on learning, and on supporting and engaging teachers with the resources to use them well. So we are very excited about the potential of Digital Promise to help bring innovative learning technologies from labs into schools and to other educational venues. We look forward to ongoing collaboration with the U.S. Department of Education, the Digital Promise Endeavor, federal agencies, and all who are committed to improving learning opportunities for the nation's students, teachers, and public. Today, we announce a portfolio of new awards in our NSF-wide program, Cyber Learning Transforming Education. The program aims to improve learning by integrating emerging technologies with knowledge from research about how people learn. We are confident that the learning technologies that are being developed through this program will enhance our ability to collect and manage data, to give personalized real-time feedback, and to promote better learning overall. This group of funded projects has the potential to transform learning anytime, anywhere, and for anybody. I now invite my colleague, Farnam Jahanian, to talk more about this exciting portfolio.
Good morning. Jasneel, I think in about 15 years, we're all going to be working for you. I am pleased to announce that NSF's Cyber Learning Program has just awarded approximately $15 million to more than 30 institutions. These projects cover a wide range of areas and show deep creativity from the research community. This investment is part of a commitment of more than $40 million across NSF in merit-reviewed cyber learning projects. Awardee institutions include community colleges, universities, and nonprofit organizations and companies. These projects address learning across a broad variety of contexts, elementary schools through high schools, post-secondary education institutions, and informal learning environments such as museums, libraries, and of course, cyberspace. Several of the projects explore the use of large-scale data to solve complex problems. For example, researchers at The Ohio State University are developing a virtual simulation workbench, which uses geospatial technologies and social networks to create online interactive maps. High school and college students can navigate the globe and use graphical, cultural, and economic data to solve real-world problems related to transportation, agriculture, urban planning, and emergency response. In another large-scale data project, researchers at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell have joined forces with Machine Sciences Incorporated to build software that will allow middle and high school students in different parts of the country to share, analyze, and dynamically visualize data. The cyber learning research portfolio also includes projects that focus on learners with special needs. Researchers from Brigham Young University will investigate the use of augmented reality to improve learning by deaf and hearing impaired children in planetariums and other venues where learners are challenged to continuously move their attention between a signing interpreter and a demonstration. There are also projects that will develop learning technologies for learning language skills, such as one awarded to researchers at Harvard, MIT, and Northeastern University to investigate the use of interactive robots to help preschoolers develop vocabulary. This project leverages emerging technologies in robotics with recent findings from social, developmental, and cognitive psychology. And along with supporting the design of new technologies, the Cyber Learning Program funded projects from Arizona State University, Carnegie Mellon University, and the University of Pittsburgh that focus on developing a new generation of intelligent tutoring system. To conclude, the projects within the NSF Cyber Learning Portfolio stand to demonstrate the promise of learning technologies to transform our schools and to enhance our lives. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So before we start with the panel, I want to recognize a couple of the other individuals and organizations that have made commitments to help launch the Digital Promise Initiative. A number of organizations have come together to support the 2012 National STEM Video Game Competition, including the Joan Ganz Cooney Center at the Sesame Workshop, Eli Media, and this is a video game competition to identify new ways to use video games to support STEM teaching and learning. It's being supported by the AMD Foundation, the Entertainment Software Association, Microsoft Xbox, CPB and PBS Ready to Learn initiative. So please join me in welcoming and supporting that initiative. The Morgridge Family Foundation is providing a $2 million gift to the Nature Conservancy to support the development of digital content that is based on conservation science. And John, so is in the audience, so please join me in welcoming John and the Morgan Family Foundation. A number of organizations in the technology community, the Tech America Foundation, the Information Technology Industry Council, the Software and Information Industry Association, are all working together to build industry support for the Digital Promise. So if you're in the House, please stand up. Last but not least, a number of foundations have stepped forward to help launch the Digital Promise, including the Carnegie Corporation and the Hewlett Foundation. So please join me in welcoming them and thanking them for their support. So we have a terrific panel, and let's get started. Mark, you're the superintendent of the Mooresville Graded School District, and you've recently been using technology to support both challenge learning, real-world problem solving, and improving the graduation rate in your school district. How have you been doing that?
Well, it's an honor to be here, and thank you. We've provided all students in Mooresville, North Carolina. It's a small district north of Charlotte, 5,600 students. We provided all students 3rd through 12th grade with a laptop computer. We rank 99th in the state in funding out of 115 districts, and we've been able to move forward using digital resources as our primary curriculum model. Our graduation rate has gone from 64% to 91% during the last 4 years. We've also increased our composite academic performance from 68 to 88%. We're currently 3rd in the state. We've also, thank you. During that same time, our poverty ratio has gone up by 25%. So we have felt the effects of the economy. But our performance in biology, in which every student has to pass as a state exam, has gone from 68% to 93%. Another area that we're particularly proud of is at the third grade level, our composite pass rate for reading is 94%. 92% for African Americans, 91% for Hispanic students. We've also been able, last year we made 100% of our AYP goals. This year we dropped to 92%. There's some more stringent requirements. But I think a real key to that has been leveraging digital resources. Our motto is every child, every day. And we have used the relevance and the engagement and using technology. We've been able to leverage the use of digital data to inform teachers and to expedite and to bring precision with intervention. We've also been able to build collaboration and a convergence of teachers, students, family, and community working together, which students feel every day. I really do believe that the key to this has been a sense of spirit of working together to make a difference. And laptops are huge, digital resources are huge, but the community sense of obligation, responsibility for every child every day has been a key to it. We've had hundreds of visitors from 42 states in the last 3 years. And I don't think anybody walks away saying anything dramatic other than the fact that we've provided resources, we're using 21st century digital resources, and I do believe that there's great opportunity, and may the promise be with us. Thank you.
The President's Council of Economic Advisors has developed a report that is looking at the market for learning technology, and we're fortunate this morning to have both Catherine Abraham and two of the folks, Ben Jones and Ronnie Chatterjee, who helped out on the report. And one of the things that they identified as a challenge to using technology to transform learning was the nature of the marketplace. You have 15,000 different school districts. You've got lengthy adoption cycles. It's difficult for schools to make evidence-based decisions about what to buy. A lot of school districts don't spend a whole lot of money on educational software. So what do you think are some of the things that a large school district like New York City could do to help drive more innovation in learning technologies?
Sure, thank you very much. My name is Dave Wiener. I'm a deputy chancellor in New York City, and one of the areas that I oversee is called our Innovation Zone. The Innovation Zone was started about 3 years ago. Chancellor Joel Klein was there, and he basically brought together private partners, federal funds, and local funds to actually build what we call the iZone now. Within the iZone, this past year, we had about 40 schools in it, and we actually, this school year, it just started a few weeks ago, actually, we now have 185 schools in the iZone. These schools are basically using technology to personalize learning for students. So we have lots of examples of schools that are basically, one example, a school we called School of One, which basically uses technology to individualize instruction for every single student in the class and actually every student in the school in math. Students come in, they're working it literally on a computer, there actually is a teacher facilitating as well, and every single student could be at a different place, but it's personalized to each child so that they're growing and it's not, you know, teaching to the middle where some kids at the top, some kids at the bottom don't get taught, but every single child has an individualized plan for them, which is regularly assessed to make sure it continues. So we have lots and lots of examples of that. Josiah's school is one of the schools that's in our iZone. And we're kind of launching the next stage of it, and it directly relates to the question that was asked. We've created what we call an education ecosystem. We started this about a month or two ago, actually a little bit longer than that, probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And largely what we believe is that within the district, we cannot innovate fast enough, and so we have to look to outside partners to come in. But in order to do that, we've got to define exactly what needs we have, what areas we need support and help in, and we need to be able to pilot some of these programs to be able to see how well they can grow. And then programs that don't work, we're going to shut down quickly, and programs that do work, like School of One, we're going to expand pretty rapidly. And we really see the school district as being the nexus of that connection between outside entrepreneurs, developers, funders that want to come together to try out these different types of options. One thing that I've been to quite a few of our iZone schools, and the only one thing that puts them together into one bucket is that they are all completely different. And that's kind of something that we really feel is important, that what might work for Josiah in East Harlem may not necessarily work for a kid in Staten Island. And the way that technology is being used in the Bronx may look different than the way it's being used in Brooklyn. But using technology to personalize instruction is really the main theme that kind of goes throughout it. So,
And what are some of the ways in which you think you could leverage the purchasing power of New York City, potentially even working with other school districts, to help drive the evolution of the market?
So we're hoping that through Digital Promise and through our education ecosystem, we're basically able to come together with different urban districts, Newark, Baltimore, DC, Philadelphia, to be able to say there are some common themes that we're having. Supporting students getting through ninth grade with enough credits to actually be 10th graders has been a struggle for us and some of our other large urban districts. And by being able to define these challenges and problems that we're having, we hope to go to the marketplace and be able to say, these are the challenges, and we need your help in creating technologies to actually be able to innovate and improve that. So almost a buyer's consortium of school districts and organizations that can come together to outline the challenges we have and look tied to the outside marketplace to help us figure out how to improve on those challenges.
Great. As I mentioned earlier, Gabe Newell is the president and founder of Valve, which is an incredibly successful video game company. Clearly, the video game industry knows a lot about how to grab and maintain the very high levels of attentive time on task of both young people and grown-ups. What role do you think there could be for your company and for the video game industry more broadly in terms of transforming teaching and learning?
Well, we got here because of our customers. We've been successful as a video game company, as an entertainment company, because we watch exactly what our customers are doing. And what started to happen was that teachers and students started to bring our games into an educational setting. And we were like, aren't we enemies, right? I mean, aren't we entertainment? And isn't that, you know, in opposition to education? So we started talking to the teachers and we started talking to researchers. And the more we looked at it, it seems like the technology, the engineering, the design, the science behind what we do is the same as the science and the technology that shows so much opportunity in the educational field. So we decided, well, if that's true, then teachers should be good video designers and video game designers, and we should be able to build compelling, engaging curriculum. So we decided to go ahead and try to do that. So we're in the process of building some middle school curriculum. We're building new tools, we're building new distribution technology to give teachers and students the ability to have access to that. And then we're gonna give those tools themselves to the teachers and students. So we're gonna learn a lot about that. We're gonna learn, you know, how these technologies are converging. And I also think that we're gonna show other video game developers what the opportunity is, how they can be contributing, how everything that we've been learning in our industry to engage and excite children is very applicable in an educational environment as well. And we're very excited at working with teachers to figure out how what we do can be a tool to them rather than a distraction.
Right. It seems one of the things that a great video game does is continually keep you on the knife edge between a challenge being just too hard, in which case you give up in frustration, and being too easy, in which case you get bored. What are some other things that the video game industry has figured out how to do that you think are broadly applicable to great teaching and learning?
We have to think about progression, we have to think about pacing, we have to think about appropriate levels of frustration. You have to be challenged, right? And you can't be too challenged or you walk away from the task.
It has to be hard fun.
It has to be hard fun is a good way to do it. I think one of the biggest steps forward we came to recently is when we started using biometric information to directly measure sort of frustration and engagement levels among game players. And it taught us a lot about everybody has a different optimal pathway through an experience. And we think that those are the kinds of lessons that are going to be very applicable, just as applicable in the classroom as they are in people's dens.
Great. Shirley, one of the points that Secretary Duncan made is that we really have to harness these technologies in ways that are not only going to promote excellence, but equity. What do you think are some of the both the challenges and opportunities in using digital learning to promote equity and to expand the circle of opportunity?
One of the things that really excited me about the first presentation was that when called upon to talk about performance of different groups, that there was the opportunity to see that, in fact, that it had made a difference for all kids. And I think that is the real opportunity that is there. Obviously, the real challenge is to make sure that the tools that are needed are going to be available. The stubborn performance gap, and I will say it in all honesty, that this is an unusual situation to be able to report data, for such as Mooresville has mm-hmm. reported. In most cases, that's not what we're seeing. We are seeing a gap that persists and that just does not move. And so the question is, why is that? In part, it is because we have thought about learning really is only something that, in fact, happens in school all too often, when, in fact, it happens or should happen everywhere. Being able to have the technology allows you to do that everywhere, anywhere, anytime with the students. And I think that is a real promise, and it's a real opportunity. making sure that we in fact have the access that is available and not differential expectations for students is really going to be a challenge. I was happy to hear that in the cyber learning grants were included some which addressed issues related to students with disabilities. And I think that that's another access issue of a different kind, but it is in fact an access issue, and very happy to see that that these kinds of things are being attended to.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the opportunities around professional development, particularly in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math? As you know, this is a major priority for a president to move the United States from the middle to the top of the pack over the next decade, and certainly teacher quality is a major challenge in the STEM area. What are some opportunities to harness technology in the area of professional development?
I think that especially for teachers who are seeking professional education and professional experiences while at the same time they're in the classroom, they need a place to be able to go and grab and get and learn and update their content. They need to be able to have access to hybrid learning opportunities, not just ones that depend on face-to-face contact. And they need to be able, I think just as many of the rest of us, if they don't understand it the first time around, to be able to go and revisit it time and time again until they do understand it. And I think that's one of the things that the technology can actually allow. We did a small experiment, basically driven by necessity, by the fact that some of the teachers in a program that we were running this summer could not, in fact, all of them couldn't be there at the same time, that we were able to incorporate a digital component with that face-to-face, in the lab kind of aspect. And I think that those kinds of opportunities that we really have to explore, how we're going to be able to move that and to use that in ways that are thoughtful to help teachers have the tools that they need to address their learning and their improvement.
Great. Gabe, one of the things that Valve is doing is making your level editors available, so that's going to really democratize both teachers and students being able to develop games for learning. What are some of the other things that you think the video game industry can and should do to support games as a powerful tool for learning?
Well, one of the things we're doing is providing support materials for teachers. So there's a website that we've put up called learningwithportals.com that will give teachers guides to how to use in an educational situation the physics curricula and the tools that we're creating. You know, just recognizing that you're part of that community and connecting with them, giving them the ability to create, you know, we're all used to social networking. Well, but in most of the social networking environments, there's not this notion of a class, there's not this notion of a teacher. And those are easy things for us to add, you know, whether it's, you know, an origin for EA or Battle.net at Blizzard. And it would be very helpful as we explore ways that entertainment software is complementary to educational experiences for other game developers to embed those kinds of notions into their social networking systems.
Mm-hmm. And are there ways in which you think that the industry could be incented to do these types of things from a commercial point of view as opposed to just a, you know, corporate social responsibility or philanthropic point of view?
Oh, absolutely. I'd sit down with Bobby Kotick at Activision or John Riccitiello at Electronic Arts and just walk them through our experiences and what we've been learning. I think there are tremendous opportunities to, not just commercial opportunities, but I think to better understand the businesses that we're already in. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are convergent problems.
Right.
If they learn how to help a student in a middle school understand fractions, they're probably going to find that they're better across the board at everything else that they're trying to do. I think, you know, being better at this will help their bottom line in a very ongoing basis.
Great, that's terrific. So Dave, as you have worked on developing an innovation ecosystem, what are some of the challenges that smaller companies, which is where a lot of the innovation occurs, have reported to you as challenges associated with the addressing the educational market, and what are some of the things that you think school districts could do to help address those barriers?
One of the biggest barriers that we've heard people say is simply access. People don't know how to access the marketplace of schools. It's mm-hmm. very difficult to get in. If you can make a connection, you may be able to get into one school or two schools, but it's really hard to actually be able to get access. The second thing is this idea of piloting programs or having, you know, some degree of research and design. In education, it's, you know, it's the do no harm. There's a nervousness that if we try something new, it might be worse than what we currently have. And although what we right. currently have is not great, right. we're a little nervous it's going to go down. and we feel like that actually is our responsibility as the district to actually, first of all, open up our environment to smaller developers, new people that want to get in, but also to pilot. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think we recognize most clearly is, so we have about 185 schools that are now in our iZone, and we're going up to 400 in 2 years, that some of the models that we create are not going to work. Right. They may be fine, they may not, you know, they may not harm students, but they're not going to be those groundbreaking leaps forward that we actually need. But our hope is that of the 400 schools that are trying out lots of different technologies and partnering with outside smaller and larger entrepreneurs, that we will find enough in that to dramatically be able to grow. School of One is a great example again, because it's something that has worked well. It's at a school in Brooklyn right now. We're expanding to 5 new School of One sites in January, and actually 7 additional ones in September. So data that shows that some of these entrepreneurial, these different types of ideas that are actually working, we want to expand quickly, and the ideas that aren't going to work, we're going to close down as fast as we can. And allowing smaller businesses, smaller groups to actually access and come into the schools, be able to try things out and pilot things is really where we feel like we can have a lot of support and influence.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like one of the ways in which large school districts could help drive the market is to define, as you said, some specific learning outcomes or specific problems that you're facing, and saying, you know, if you could develop a technology-enabled solution that would deliver the following results, and here's how we'd measure it, then we would buy it. So by being a more proactive voice of the customer, you might be in a position of saying, you know, we don't want to just go out and buy a lot of technology for the sake of technology, but we want to use it to solve a particular problem. Are there things like that that come to mind that could serve as the basis for a pilot for how procurement could drive innovation to solve a particular learning challenge?
Yeah, I mean, one of the challenges, I think school districts and New York City, I would say, is one of them, has really been defining what those challenges are. We've done a bad job of saying, hey, this is the challenge we're facing, whether it's the achievement gap or supporting students with disabilities or allowing students to access more curricula. We've done a poor job of doing that. The innovation ecosystem, and again, I kind of coupled with Digital Promise, we hope, will allow us to be able to say, these are some of the challenges we're facing. What's really important also is that we look at it at all of our different schools, and some of our schools have different challenges. One of the schools in the iZone right now is a school called Brooklyn Tech. It's one of our exam schools. It's a really high-functioning school. It's a Stuyvesant-type school, so it's a really has a top-level student. Well, one of the challenges that we heard from their community and their parents were that sounds crazy, but the juniors and seniors in their schools, their schedules were so tight they weren't able to access enough AP classes. So I'm not sure any student wants to take 7 AP classes as a high school student, but if there is a child that does, it's going to be at Brooklyn Tech. So what we actually did is we actually built a digital platform to actually allow blended learning. So students are now actually getting some of the learning in the classroom about half the time, and then half the time they're required to do it at home as part of homework and extended day. assignments. Onus reminds me of when I was in college and I had to do some online work, but we're really allowing our high school students to do it. So whereas last year, Brooklyn Tech seniors could only take 5 AP classes, they can now take 7. not that I would encourage anyone to do that if they didn't want to, but that's something they could do. On the other end of the spectrum,
that's a high class problem.
Yes. But it is a problem that we're helping to solve, and that marketplace does it. On the other end of the spectrum, we have schools that are called transfer schools, and these schools are for students who have actually dropped out of a traditional high school, and they're trying to get re-engaged. What we find is these kids come to us at 16, 17, 18 years old with 2 credits, 3 credits. So it's going to take them 4, almost 5 more years to actually get through high school. Traditionally, we've been unable to provide more than about 5 or 6 classes a year. With our online platform now, we're actually able to double and actually almost triple the number of classes a student be able to take in a year. So if you're 17 years old and you have the credits of a 9th grader, you can actually get through high school in 2 years as long as you're committed and able to do learning inside the school day and outside of it. Mm-hmm. It allows us to meet students who have non-traditional schedules, students that have to work or are raising a child, that we can actually work around their schedule.
So you're trying to move towards competency-based assessment as opposed to how many hours were you in class?
That's exactly right. And we see it basically for all of our students, some of our top students, some of our students that are struggling the most, and all over the board. So we have defined these challenges, and we've worked with groups like Cisco and Google and Apple to say, these are some of our challenges. We need to get credit accumulation faster in a competency-based manner, and we need your help in figuring out how we can do that. And that's really where we've been able to innovate. So. Right.
Now, Mark, you cited some really extraordinary figures in terms of the improvements that you've been able to make in student learning outcomes, and obviously, there were probably a lot of things that went into that, leadership, parental engagement, teacher professional development. But what do you think were some of the key wins in terms of the role that technology and enabled learning played in that?
Well, one of the real exciting outcomes that was kind of an unintended is the level of collaboration that goes on after school, that goes on with teachers in the evening and on the weekends and from state to state and region to region. And there's this sense of a collaborative hum that occurs, and there's this same type of excitement that is occurring with teachers that we see with students. And I think the relevance, the fact that it's relevant to the future rather than part of the past, is driving our new teachers' energy and excitement. And I also think that when parents see this opportunity for children, that they're more inclined to be part of it. We're seeing in the evenings our teachers will engage with students on online discussion boards. Last winter we were out for snow, and we had semester exams coming up, and we had to move ahead, but our teachers sent out emails, and we had hundreds of students online in the evening connecting with each other, connecting with their teachers, preparing for this opportunity. So I think that there are huge dividends. And I think with the League of Innovative Schools, Terry Greer, the superintendent of Houston ISD, good friend and colleague, we talk regularly. Now, he's a district of 200,000 plus students, but the opportunity to connect locally across the nation and across the world, I think, brings a level of excitement to the classroom that there's a new sense of opportunity for all, for teachers and for students.
Well, please join me in thanking what has been an absolutely terrific panel. So we're going to go to the next phase of the program. There are going to be 3 breakout sessions. Everyone should know which breakout session they're supposed to go to. And there'll be people with signs telling you where to go. I also want to introduce Adam Frankel, who is... Adam, stand up. Please join me in thanking Adam. And this is really going to require an all-hands-on-deck effort, so please talk to Adam if you're interested in talking about how you can get involved, how your organization can get involved in making the digital promise a reality. Thank you.